with innumerable spies and informers. On the slightest accusation, the first of the Roman nobles who had governed provinces, commanded armies, and been adorned with the consular and triumphal ornaments, were chained on the public carriages and hurried away to the emperor's presence. Confiscation, exile, or simple death were esteemed uncommon instances of his lenity. Some of the unfortunate sufferers he ordered to be sewed up in the hides of slaughtered animals, others to be exposed to wild beasts, others again to be beaten to death with clubs. During the 3 years of his reign, he disdained to visit either Rome or Italy. His camp, occasionally removed from the banks of the Rhine to those of the Danube, was the seat of his stern despotism, which trampled on every principle of law and justice, and was supported by the avowed power of the sword.
The cruelties and injustices of Maximin led to African conspirators offering the purple to Gordianus, proconsul of Africa. He and his son Gordian, who was also declared emperor, were acclaimed by the Senate in Rome. But the Gordians were defeated in battle at Carthage and died. This same year, AD 238, the Senate in Rome, fearing the wrath of Maximin, elected two of their number to become emperors and challenge the tyrant. Maximus was to wage the war against Maximin, while Balbinus was to administer the civil affairs of the empire. But the mobs in Rome neither loved Maximus nor feared Balbinus. They demanded that Gordian III, grandson to Gordian I, be made a third emperor alongside the Senate's choices. This was accepted by a reluctant Senate.
Whilst in Rome and Africa, revolutions succeeded each other with such amazing rapidity, the mind of Maximin was agitated by the most furious passions. He is said to have received the news of the rebellion of the Gordians and of the decree of the Senate against him, not with the temper of a man, but the rage of a wild beast, which, as it could not discharge itself from the distant Senate, threatened the life of his son, of his friends, and of all who ventured to approach his person. The grateful intelligence of the death of the Gordians was quickly followed by the assurance that the Senate, laying aside all hopes of pardon or accommodation, had substituted in their room two emperors with whose merit he could not be unacquainted. Revenge was the only consolation left to Maximin, and revenge could only be obtained by arms. The strength of the legions had been assembled by Alexander from all parts of the empire. Three successful campaigns against the Germans and the Sarmatians had raised their fame, confirmed their discipline, and even increased their numbers by filling the ranks with the flower of the barbarian youth. The life of Maximin had been spent in war, and the candid severity of history cannot refuse him the valour of a soldier, or even the abilities of an experienced general. When the troops of Maximin, advancing in excellent order, arrived at the foot of the Julian Alps, they were terrified by the silence and desolation that reigned on the frontiers of Italy. The villages and open towns had been abandoned on their approach by the inhabitants. The cattle was driven away, the provisions removed or destroyed, the bridges broke down, nor was anything left which could afford either shelter or give subsistence to an invader. Such had been the wise orders of the generals of the Senate, whose design was to protract the war, to ruin the army of Maximin by the slow operation of famine, and to consume his strength in the sieges of the principal cities of Italy, which they had plentifully stored with men and provisions from the deserted country. A party of Praetorian guards, who trembled for their wives and children in the camp of Alba, near Rome, executed the sentence of the Senate. Maximin, abandoned by his guards, was, A.D. 238 April, slain in his tent with his son, whom he had associated to the honours of the purple, Anulinus the prefect, and the principal ministers of his tyranny. Such was the deserved fate of a brutal savage, destitute, as he has generally been represented, of every sentiment that distinguishes a civilized or even a human being. The body was suited to the soul. The stature of Maximin exceeded the measure of 8 feet, and circumstances almost incredible are related of his matchless strength and appetite. Had he lived in a less enlightened age, tradition and poetry might well have described him as one of those monstrous giants whose supernatural power was constantly exerted for the destruction of mankind. What reward may we expect for delivering Rome from a monster? was the question.